It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. The pandemic has been hard on women, especially mothers trying to work, parent, and teach their children simultaneously. Since the pandemic began, more than 2 million women have left the workforce, and as a result, women have also carried the brunt of the economic costs of the pandemic. And of course, it's not just about the money lost. Working mothers are expected to fill in the social safety gaps brought about by schools and other social services that have had to close. Catherine Goldstein is with me. She's the creator and host of the Double Shift podcast, which talks all about these issues. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Catherine, you've interviewed a number of mothers. One of them stood out to me. She said that in the last year, she's lost about $40,000 in income. And then she also had to liquidate about $10,000 in retirement savings. Catherine, is she typical?
Well, I think that the financial losses have been staggering for mothers, especially single mothers. But, you know, we've had some programs in place like unemployment, but those have been really inadequate to address the sort of large scale losses, because especially with entire industries going away. And I think I asked women across the country to actually tally how much money they had lost, because I think sometimes these things seem really intangible, but there are dollar amounts behind what people have lost in the last year, and it's really staggering.
Is there a big number that we're looking at right now that your research has found? Because that, to be, and as I'm sure you know, unemployment only takes certain folks, but so far, it doesn't necessarily cover if you had a very high income. It's not necessarily going to cover that gap. So are there numbers that you can help us pin down sort of what the collective loss has been for women?
I think it is very hard to pin down a total collective loss for women. I think what we do know is the numbers we do have about, for example, leaving the labor force only capture a fraction of the total collateral damage, in my opinion, because we also are dealing with issues like people who are still looking for work aren't counted in that number. People who are working at far reduced hours aren't counted in that number. And so it's very hard, because the tools of measurements that we've had for past economic crises don't really capture what has happened in the last year for mothers.
I was tweeting this morning about this issue in advance of our conversation, and one of the things that continues to stand out to me is, where are employers in this conversation? I just think it's unacceptable to ask Americans, largely women, to, you know, we understood in the beginning of the pandemic that all of us were sort of wrapping our heads around this, but at this point, it's been a year, and largely women, but there are some men, are struggling, continue to struggle with finding childcare. Next week, for example, is a holiday. Many daycares will be closed. Schools will be closed. Some schools haven't even reopened yet. So where are employers in all this? Are they shirking their responsibility to their employees, Catherine?
So I think many, many employers had a tremendous opportunity to lead and help reimagine a more just and humane workplace that valued caregiving. And I would say, from what my reporting and what I've heard from mothers across the country, most employers have not stepped up to that challenge. I think in the very beginning of the pandemic, there was this idea like, oh, we'll allow for flexibility. Like, you can do, if you're a white collar worker, you can work between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. to catch up. Well, of course, that's not sustainable, you know, for more than a few days, much less a year. So I think that I think workplaces have not stepped up. Workplaces need to be offering childcare subsidies. We need to be radically rethinking the workplace. Like, why do we have 40-hour work weeks during certain hours for a lot of white-collar workers? I mean, I think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity out of this crisis to think about what productivity is. And I think workplaces have actually, for the most part, were very hostile places to mothers and caregivers before the pandemic. And my reporting has shown, I don't think, for the most part, it's only gotten worse.
I mean, the New York Times in its Primal Scream reporting called it outright a betrayal of women, and particularly working women. And I would have to agree with that assessment, being in that situation myself. But, Catherine, other women have had to suddenly rely on other networks, networks who during a pandemic may have also been strained, friends and families who themselves were struggling. How has that affected women, particularly in this moment?
Well, I think community is really important. We need our communities to, bring us soup when we're sick and, you know, give us a ride when our car breaks down. But communities cannot replace an active functioning government and an active functioning social safety net. Women and especially mothers have been the shock absorbers of this pandemic, and we can't rely on GoFundMes and friends and neighbors to get us through this. We need real government policies that support working families and actually address the realities of what mothers have experienced in the last year.
I want to play a clip from a woman you interviewed. Her name is Jenna, talking a little bit about where she finds herself in terms of support.
The past few times I've needed help, I like go through, well, I've already asked that person for money and I've already asked that person. And I definitely don't want to ask this person again because they helped me so much the last time. And you're thinking like, who else can I ask that I'm close enough with to be that vulnerable?
This is where, as you said, companies can step in, the federal government can step in. And in fact, the federal government stepped in last year in 2020 and did offer some paid leave for caregiving. Where does that stand right now? My understanding is that it's not as strong as it may have been. The offer is not as strong as it may have been in 2020.
So caregiving, there was some temporary, there was caregiving leave offered, not to everyone, to certain kinds of employees at certain kinds of companies as a sort of stopgap method, a stopgap measure when we thought that maybe everything was going to go back to normal after a few weeks or a few months. Obviously, that's not the case. As of now, we have no national paid family leave. We have no national sick leave. All these things, like if there was ever a crisis that showed why we need this, people need to be able to take care of people in their families, to quarantine without fear of losing their jobs, livelihoods, being unable to pay their rent. And right now, most of those protections have basically, and opportunities have expired. And so that's why really not stopgap measures, but actual long-term permanent measures like paid family leave absolutely need to be a part of a more just future coming out of this pandemic.
Sort of speaking about what companies can do, and we talked a little bit about what leave was available in 2020, but I want to talk a little bit about the child stimulus tax credit, because the last stimulus package included that, and it's supposed to give parents between $200 and $300 per child per month. Tell us about that. How effective is something like that?
I am overwhelmingly excited about this policy. I think this policy, while it may not seem like a huge amount of money, the fact that this is going to be coming out in monthly payments, first of all, it predicts that it's going to cut the child poverty rate in half in this country, which is tremendous. But I think also what's so exciting about it is that for the first time, there's an acknowledgement from our government that raising children is expensive, and our ethos should not be every family for themselves and every parent for themselves. And this will not fix all of the problems that parents and especially mothers have faced in this last year, but this money definitely will help. And I think it'll actually increase labor participation for mothers rather than decrease anything.
Now, of course, that's not available to all parents. That's available to people who are making under a certain amount of money, right?
Well, yes, but it extends up to joint filings of $400,000 a year. So it actually is going to cover a vast majority of families.
As we look ahead, what do you think is necessary? I mean, I don't want to act as though I'm not personally affected by this fight. I've said this on the show before, that I do think that we need some sort of national childcare system, apparatus, something to to really support working parents. I, however, don't see how realistic that is. Am I being a pessimist, or is there something to be optimistic about when we think about how we're going to help, if we're going to help working parents and working mothers specifically going forward?
Well, it's interesting because I totally agree. We need to fully revitalize the childcare industry and make it far better than it was before, because it was before the pandemic, it was already expensive and hard to access. And now there's even more closures, there's more costs. And, you know, the idea that we believe children have a right to a public education starting at age five doesn't really make any sense. Like, why age five? Why kindergarten? Why not before that? And I think that, you know, maybe it doesn't feel like it's going to happen immediately, but if you had told me a year ago we would be getting this childcare tax credit where families would be getting between $200 and $300 a month for children for a year and with the potential to become permanent, that would have seemed like a complete pipe dream. So I think because we're in this moment of tremendous change and crisis, this is our opportunity. This is the moment where historians will look back and see what we did and what we didn't do. And so I think that there is an opportunity to help raise consciousness about what a better future could look like and help mobilize people around that.
Change is slow in many instances, as you know. And I wonder, not to continue to be a pessimist, but I wonder, Catherine, if what we saw this year in terms of employers largely, maybe not intentionally shrugging their shoulders, but really not having a plan in place to help their employees manage childcare and other caregiving needs. That was the worst of it, right? I mean, we were really in the worst of it. We're now starting to come out into a post-pandemic world. And my fear is that employers will say, well, you managed to get through 2020. You can definitely manage to get through 2021 and 22 without additional supports.
Yeah, I think we are at a moment where we have to demand change. And I think, you know, one of the things I've come to after working on these issues for a number of years is like, nobody's going to come fix things for mothers. Like, mothers have to get angry and demand that things be changed on our behalf. Like, no one's coming to fix this for us. And I think that the last year has shown that in a very, very harsh way. And so to me, there's a couple of different things in place. I don't think the change we need can't fully come from at the employer level, because it's always going to be really unequal. And we see that with paid family leave right now. Some people, by virtue of where they work, have relatively quote unquote generous policies, while most of Americans literally get nothing and 25% of women go back to work after 2 weeks after having a baby. So we need really, I think, this is why we have government. Government should exist to help citizens with basic needs. That's why we pay taxes, and that's why we have this organization. And so I think that saying, you know, employers need to do better, I think that the government can help push for that a lot. And I think that, you know, but I also, from the employer side, employers are going to lose a vast amount of talent. Women are more educated than men. They, in terms of college graduation rates.
But Catherine, do they care if that's how they're treating women? I mean, I again don't want to lead into pessimism, but I just wonder if employers really care about the talent that they stand to lose, particularly if those women are more educated, as you mentioned, more mature, probably cost more. I just wonder if that is a priority for employers, or maybe they'll see it further down the line. I agree with you. I just don't know if employers are necessarily going to see that as a loss, but maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, I think the best case, you know, the best example we have around this of like recent history, because obviously we've never been in a moment quite like this, but I have seen really effective campaigning for paid family parental leave for from employees, basically making a business case. So like, the thing is that a lot of these policies in terms of supporting people with caregiving needs, supporting families, supporting a diverse workforce, there is actually a compelling business case for why you should do this. So I'm not like believing that people are going to do this out of the goodness of their hearts, but I think that there's actually like a pretty cold capitalist calculation that when you, especially with higher skilled workers, like if you basically just can't retain people, have a lot of open seats, don't have top talent to compete in the workforce, you know, within your industry, like people respond to that argument. And it's not about altruism. I think the idea that employers are going to do this out of the goodness of their hearts isn't going to happen. But I think that there is an economic argument to be made.
Well, we'll see if the current presidential Biden-Harris administration hears what many mothers are saying. Catherine Goldstein is the creator and the host of the Double Shift podcast, a show that challenges the status quo of motherhood in the United States. Catherine, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.